Vice President Mike Pence is back in Washington after a trip to Europe to try to reassure nervous allies there about foreign policy in the Trump administration. There's also concern in China about what the future holds as the new administration takes over. John Pomfret has long reported on and studied the relationship between the U.S. and China. His new book is The Beautiful Country in the Middle Kingdom, America and China, 1776 to the present. John, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've said this relationship between the U.S. and China is really too important to fail. Tell us why.
Well, for one, the trading relationship is absolutely enormous. China has off and on been our biggest trading partner over the course of the last 5 years. And China and American companies are basically integrated in the global supply chain for all things from Apple iPhones to Dell computers to a variety of products to airplanes, etc. And so just from the trading aspect, it's a hugely important relationship. And then you look at climate change. The two countries are working very closely together, at least they were, trying to deal with climate change. And then also on security issues. I mean, probably the most dangerous place in the world right now would be considered North Korea. And how and if the United States and China can work together to tamp down that place as a threat, it would be enormously consequential, not just for America and China, but for all of Northeast Asia as well.
Trade, security, climate change, those are big.
Those are huge. And counterterrorism as well. Both countries clearly have a shared interest in tamping down counterterrorism.
Right after the inauguration, President Trump called the president of Taiwan. That angered Beijing. Since then, has reversed himself and said he backs the one China policy. What's the current thinking in Beijing about President Trump?
So during the campaign, the Chinese seemed to be very supportive of Trump, partially because they really didn't like Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at all. They had a sense that Trump would be transactional in his relationship with China, that they could do business with a businessman. But then on the One China issue, he began to question whether the United States had to continue its policy of basically acknowledging that China wants Taiwan back, but not acknowledging that Taiwan really belongs to China. And so in taking the phone call from the President Tsai Ing-wen, he basically drew from the Chinese perspective, he was questioning sort of the whole basis of the relationship between the United States and China over the last almost five decades. And now that he's walked that back, it seems that to a certain extent, folks in Beijing are a little more calm about the relationship, but still they look at Trump as a highly unpredictable potential partner with China. They don't know what he's going to do next. And actually, from Trump's perspective, he's kind of doing, it seems to be doing that a bit on purpose. But we're still really waiting for the Trump administration to tell us what its China policy is. Right now, we're at this kind of moment where, you know, because Trump had threatened effectively a trade war with China, threatened to slap 45% tariffs on all Chinese goods, but it doesn't now seem, he doesn't seem to be wanting to do that anymore. So exactly how he's going to approach China, I think, still is a huge open question, both for Americans who are interested in the subject, but also for the Chinese.
Business interests and diplomacy want a certain level of stability and predictability, and he's unpredictable, and that unnerves Beijing.
Yeah, exactly. Beijing is clearly unnerved. Now, that he walked back the One China policy was portrayed in some circles in the United States as sort of a sign of his weakness. But I think that was sort of, from my perspective, that was the basis from which the relationship can now proceed. Because if you don't accept the One China policy, which is actually not that onerous for the United States to accept, the Chinese won't do business with you at all. And they also are in positions to do a lot of troubling things to the United States or to America's potential competitors around the world. For example, they could not carry out UN sanctions on North Korea, or they could break sanctions with Iran, or they could resume missile sales to Syria and to Iran. So the Chinese have a potential of being of misbehaving. And American administrations have clearly learned lessons about that.
John, we should explain the One China policy. China sees Taiwan as a renegade province. Explain the One China policy to us.
So from the U.S. perspective, saying that they agree to the One China policy means basically the United States acknowledges that China wants Taiwan back. But the United States does not acknowledge that Taiwan actually belongs to the People's Republic of China. That's not the U.S. policy, basically. We just sort of acknowledge that, yeah, that's you want that back, we get it, but that's it. And so from that perspective, it's not that onerous for American presidents to embrace that policy.
Last time we talked, you said you do not think there will be a trade war between the U.S. and China. Do you still think that, and why?
Every president since Richard Nixon has run on a platform of getting tough with China, except for Obama. So Carter did it, Clinton did it, George W. Bush did it. And so I think Trump falls into that category of saying, I'm going to be tough on China. But once he enters office, the reality of this massively complex, very important relationship sets in. And the China trade relationship, if you, for example, begin to sanction all these Chinese imports to the United States, you definitely harm China, but you also harm hugely Western companies all over the world, including American companies. I mean, 50% of China's exports to the United States are made by foreign companies in China. And of those exports, if it's a high-tech export, it's 70%. And so you are hurting, definitely hurting Chinese, but you're also hurting Western companies and American companies as well. And so slapping a broad tariff just on Chinese products, I don't think is going to go. And you clearly see the Trump administration pivoting away from that and embracing more broadly a border tax on all imports to the United States. But we don't even know if that's going to happen, again, because the potential economic fallout could be so significant.
It's an economic relationship, again, too big to fail.
Exactly. I think we're witnessing very publicly and sometimes embarrassingly the education of Donald Trump on China. And you see people around him pushing him in potentially a more rational direction towards dealing with China. But I also have to acknowledge that I think he embraced an essential truth about our relationship with China. And it's that for the last 10 years, perhaps more, it's been unbalanced. And that the Chinese have really played the United States. And I think Trump identifying that is something we have to give him credit for. The question is, what type of strategy is he going to come up with that might help the United States right the balance of the relationship? And I think that's the huge challenge.
It's a bit of on-the-job training, but give him credit for taking a different, new approach to China.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about North Korea. China just suspended imports of coal from North Korea. Did China take that step in response to North Korea's recent missile test?
So it's clear that in Chinese society, for example, everybody basically thinks North Korea is a joke, a very scary joke, but a joke. I mean, people traveled to North Korea from China to kind of look at it as like, this is what we were like. This is what China was like when it was poor and really communist. They talk about Kim Jong-un. They call him Jin Sampang. So that means Kim number three fatty. And so on a societal level, they look down their noses at the North Koreans. But from a geopolitical standpoint, they kind of look at North Korea as their East Germany. And they think if it collapses, well, we're going to be next, or we could be next. You know, you have the peninsula united under a pro-American South Korean, well, Korean government. What do you do with the 30,000 American troops there, et cetera? So it's a cascading series of bad potential events should that regime collapse. So they support it. And now, though, they're clearly unhappy with Kim Jong-un's continued missile tests and nuclear tests, and they want that to stop. At the same time, they're not willing to risk the collapse of the regime. So they're stuck in a way. And so this latest coal import ban is clearly designed to cut into the foreign exchange earnings of the North Korean regime in order to slow down perhaps their military programs. But we have to see whether, one, it's actually carried out, and two, if there's another, the other shoe's going to drop, which would mean squeezing North Korea even more. And one of the areas they could do would be in cutting its China's oil exports to North Korea. And there are other areas as well in terms of blocking a whole array of Chinese companies which have been helping North Korea break the sanctions for years. And so this is a good first step, but there's a lot more that China can do. China says it has no influence over North Korea, and that's just not true. It really controls the access, the trade access, and the money flows into North Korea as well.
And John, what are we to make of North Korea's role and potentially Kim Jong-un's role in the bizarre assassination of his half-brother in Malaysia? What motivation does he have to do that if he did?
So it's clear that Kim Jong-un viewed his brother, half-brother, as a potential political rival. Mm. And so being in a political dynasty, he just made the decision to rub him out. And he got him in a place where he was less protected than if he was in Macau or in China, because there the Chinese were giving him bodyguards.
John Pomfret, his latest book is The Beautiful Country in the Middle Kingdom, America and China, 1776 to the present. John, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.